Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos. That's Bob Mackowitz. We are brought to you by Jeff Pollock. If you need a lawyer, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. JeffPollock.com. He's our friend. He's our lawyer. At some point, you'll need legal help, and that's when you call Jeff Pollock. Hey, Bob.
I'm going to call him today because I'm setting up our Christmas lunch.
Oh, that's right.
You, me, and him are supposed to grab a bite.
Well, the thing is, it'll have to be an early lunch because most days I'm doing 2 to 4. But, I mean, I can find out some days I'm doing the morning show, but I want to do it. I want to get together and break bread with, you know, two people that I'm quite fond of.
I'm not eating bread right now, so you'll have to break bread with him.
What about bread pudding?
I think that's just bread.
Yeah.
But it's bread soaked in stuff, isn't it? Like rum and things like that?
We had the Christmas party at the National Club, so there was one of the desserts there was bread pudding.
Of course it was, Matt. Did you have your... Was it prime rib?
Of course.
And
what
was
are
it,
you, monsters?
Carving station?
Of course there's a carving station. What are we, assholes? Yes. There was a carving station with the chefs with the proper white hat on the top. And man, these guys know what they're doing. These guys cut you. You just say how thick, you know, or thin you want that prime rib. It's on your plate.
Yeah. Well, I would expect nothing less of the National Club.
Yeah.
You know, I was feeling really Christmassy today. I thought because your place is really close to the distillery district and they always have the big Christmas market there.
They do.
I thought maybe I'll poke my head by and pick up a Christmas ornament for the tree. Something new because I'm very Christmassy. And then I walked into your place, Matt, and I realized yet again, every time I think I'm doing something, you have done it 1,000 times more.
Yeah, Amy deserves most of the credit for it. The house right now, we are in mid-decoration. We're a little bit late this year because of renovations. No one needs to hear about that. We've got the main Christmas tree. We've got 3 or 4 other smaller ones. And there's lights going on everywhere.
There's more than 3 or 4 little smaller ones. There is probably about a dozen small trees.
That's fair.
In fact, when I first walked in, I did a 360. And every time I moved, you know, say like 20 degrees, I saw a new tree.
Bob, this is, I didn't want to tell you this.
But panoramic trees.
What's that? Yes. Oh, yeah. But this is for a very specific reason. Because we have just gotten hired by the Clippers. So we are planting trees everywhere.
Is Kawhi going to come over and sing carols?
This is the Kawhi Leonard inspired house with trees everywhere.
Oh my God. Have you been saving that joke or did you just come up with it?
I holstered it right before we started.
That's so good.
Yeah, I got that joke and I knew I could throw it out here now. We also need to discuss.
Okay.
How many people do you think on Earth carry a pencil sharpener?
Well, I know of at least one.
Yeah, and I'm staring at him right now. You came in and you had your pencil and you had your pencil sharpener. I love that. But how many people do you think, and you're holding it right now, the little metallic pencil sharpener. How about this? What percentage of people have never sharpened a pencil?
8.
8%?
I'm guessing based on my own behaviors.
Do you think anyone under the age of 25 has ever sharpened a pencil?
No, that's probably true. That's a great point. Demographically, yeah. I think I've aged myself up a little bit. I like to write with a nice sharp pencil. And I tell people that this is almost like when you're playing pool and you're chalking your cue. Soon as I have a little bit of a fine, like as soon as the fine point is gone and it's a bit rounded, sharpen her up, baby.
Looks good.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm such a messy writer that I need every advantage I can get.
I see. I always took you as having good penmanship. I have shit penmanship.
Oh, no, it's really bad, Matt. Sometimes I can't even read it. I'm in a bit of an ornery mood today.
Yeah, okay.
One, I spent the weekend going over the United States. They send out this thing every year. It's like a defense strategy document where they explain the upcoming defense strategy for the year. It's about 35 pages long.
Why were you reading that, Bob? Why? Are you planning on invading?
I think they are.
Yeah. But like if they
That's do, why.
Here's the thing, Bob. If they do invade, do you think we're high on the list of draft eligible people that Canadians are going to want to thwart off the American hordes?
I would like to know if that happens, when it happens, that I did what I could to make sure it didn't happen first.
It feels like that is It is the Christmas spirit time now, and you're reading the... Okay, so sorry, continue. What's going on with the states?
Believe me. I'm just going to... Two words, Maddie.
Yeah.
Monroe Doctrine. Okay. And then we're moving on.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Control over the Western Hemisphere, but we're moving on. And the other thing is, I brought out, you know, because it's freezing out today, I've got my big winter coat. And Matt, it raises a question.
Yeah.
Why do winter coats have so many pockets?
It's always at least eight. There's always, and there's the little tiny ones, and there's like me, they come in all different shapes and sizes. And it's so annoying because you know what, your keys are in pocket number eight. And I have instinctively tried to do this. I try to watch myself, sounds odd, I make notes. Where does my hand go? What pocket does it go into first? And I try to make sure the most important things always go in that pocket, and it never happens. And you're on the TTC, and like, where's the fucking Presto card?
And you're the most organized person I know when it comes to just...
minutia.
You get so happy when you realize you can shave 30 seconds off of your morning drive. And you will do that thing every day.
What I did today, Bob, because we're down to one elevator, uh-huh. We were bringing Christmas stuff in and out. So before, I would walk, hit the elevator button, then walk back here to get the cart. So I saved myself 18 seconds of waiting because I knew the elevator was going to take a while. It was genius.
You are a genius. When it comes to this psycho. Saving time, yeah, psycho genius, hard to say. You know, column A, column B. But I'm not. I'm terrible at it. And so nine pockets in my coat, that's a flood the zone situation. I'm susceptible to QAnon right now. I can't think straight. There are too many choices. I'm confused.
There's nothing user-friendly about winter gear.
It's winter period.
Yeah, it really is. It's just a pain in the ass. And you have to buy at least 12 pairs of the dollar store mittens because you will lose mittens. It's going to happen. And just it's my main thing I don't like about skiing. I love to downhill ski, but I hate having to try to accumulate everything required before you get on the hill.
I got a lot of sports to get to, Matt. Is there anything else you want to talk about before I start throwing stuff out?
No, I'm all set. Let's do it. Where do you want to start?
I wanted to start with the Raptors because I had a question this morning. They lost to the Celtics yesterday, a pretty close game. And then previous to that, they got shelled by the Charlotte Hornets, and that was about a 30-point loss.
111-86 Friday night. Yeah, ugly.
That was an ugly game. So they've lost four of their last five. They've lost two of those games to the Hornets, who are presumably terrible. So... we were all so high on the Raptors. We were all so excited. I was extolling the virtues of Masai Ujiri's vision of this team. They don't look very good right now. So here's the question I want to throw to you. How do we worry about this team without looking stupid?
The boring, obvious answer is, okay, they've lost three in a row, and I think they've lost five of their last six. The boring answer is you just wait. You know,
so you don't worry?
You don't worry that, you know, you give it a little bit more time. That would be the smart thing to do.
Okay. Expectations are what creates worry.
Correct.
And because they were, you know, at the head of the Atlantic for a good stretch of time, and they're still third in the conference, it feels like if they fell out of the top six, that would be a failure, but only based on how they started the year. Previous to the start of the year, they felt like a play-in team, and they might very well be a play-in team. But that's going to feel like a disappointment, and I don't want to hang that on this team. So that's why I'm saying, like, how do we worry without looking stupid?
Right, because it is about expectation management.
Honestly, if they finished eighth in the conference, wouldn't you be a little disappointed now?
Today, I would be disappointed.
Right.
At the beginning of the year, that's kind of where I had been.
Unfortunately, we're here today.
We're here today, yes.
Well, it was a good 6 weeks ago. We'll get out of here with that shit, as John Mulaney would say.
I'm not as worried because Scotty Barnes has taken a step.
Mm-hmm.
Not a giant leap, but he's taken a step. I trust Scotty Barnes. That's a good thing. And when RJ Barrett comes back, that takes a lot of the pressure off Brandon Ingram. Because let's face it, so much of this is just Brandon Ingram, especially in the fourth quarters, has looked bad. He's looked tired. He's looked sluggish. He shouldn't be tired. He's not an old guy. But he hasn't played a full season of basketball in a while. And maybe this is just all catching up to him.
There's two things. One is usage rate. And without RJ, it obviously goes up. And he looks a little bit like, do you remember Homer in the episode when Lisa gets a pony and he has to have two jobs?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's lying in bed. He's got to go to his next job. And he just says, how long do ponies live? And Marge says, 30 years. And he goes, no. He's just so tired.
Oh, I haven't thought about that episode in ages. He lies in the bed, then gets right back up again.
You know, the other thing is the Raptors' style of play, because they don't have an offensive killer, requires a lot of precision. Movement requires a lot of you can't get stuff wrong and timing really matters. How many times do you see B.I. if he holds the ball too long, all of a sudden there's two guys on him?
Yeah.
There's not a lot of places to go once there's two guys on him, right? And so Darko's system, it tires people out. And defensively, too, when you play positionless basketball, it's all about movement and, like, movement equals fatigue. So I'm not saying that these guys are necessarily tired. What I am saying is that precision is an easy thing to lose. It's the first thing that goes. And the Raptors system depends on precision.
I wonder, how about this? Wait for R.J. Barrett. When R.J. Barrett, if R.J. Barrett comes, when he comes back, if it still looks like it has over the last six games, then it is time to panic. And this is boring. I know this is boring, just going like more the level-headed approach to it all. But I just...
But this is what I asked you, which is how do you worry? And what you're saying is you can't really worry until they get RJ back. Mm-hmm. Here's my response to that, though. RJ's not a great player.
He's a good player.
He's a good player.
Yeah.
How many times would you look at a basketball team and say the success of this team depends on the return of a pretty decent player?
More now than ever before. The Pacers got to the final because they had so much depth.
Okay,
and because of all the running, as you mentioned, that just having enough healthy guys. Like, yeah, like back in the day, it's like, oh, you're counting on RJ Barrett? Enjoy your seventh seed if everything else goes right. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go another week. Now, all this calmness I'm talking about, if a week from now the Raptors are looking more like they did on Friday night, at least Sunday, they had a lead late against Boston. If a week from now, they're still playing this shitty and they're losing by large margins, I can't promise I'm going to be this level-headed.
I didn't love the start against the Celtics because they had been so poor against the Charlotte Hornets. And what you really want to see is that teams hate losing. And if you've been kind of embarrassed by a bad team, the last thing you want to do is have them come out on their home floor against a divisional rival, not show up for the first half. They were terrible in the first half. The third quarter, they were excellent. The fourth quarter, it's so hard to, you know, when you have to claw back from like 20 down.
It takes a lot out of you.
It just takes a lot out of you. So you can get over that initial hump, you know, between Derek White and the fact that they were hitting their threes, Celtics were.
They hit 23 pointers. It's hard to win.
It's hard to win.
So if you can add that to the fire of not freak out, but don't worry, listeners. If the Raptors are like this a week from now, there'll be far less rational thoughts from me.
So you talked about depth, and this is what worried me, because I thought Grady Dick and Jacoby Walter were both pretty terrible. And so did Darko, because A.J. Lawson and Elijah Martin wind up drawing in, which is nice. I'm glad those guys got some run, but it's because the guys who were first-round draft picks were shit and were sent to the bench. So I created a list of five, Matt, and I want you to stack rank them. They're five young Raptors, or five new Raptors, mostly. And I want you to stack rank them in terms of how much of a part of the Raptors' future do you think these five players will be?
Okay.
Mamu, a.k.a. the Mamushka. Mm-hmm. Jacoby Walter, Grady Dick, CMB, Colin Murray-Boyles, and Jamal Shedd.
I think number one is Colin Murray-Boyles. Okay. I'll just go with the young guy and the high draft pick, just going on the pure statistics of it. Number two, I'm going to go Jamal Shedd. Number three, I'm going to go Mamu. Four, I'm still going to do Grady Dick. And five, I'm going to go Jacoby Walter.
We're almost identical.
My I bet top you flip forward five.
Not exactly, no, actually. CMB and Shedd were my top two because you could see them being part of a rotation, an eight-man rotation, moving forward. And Colin Murray, I can never say his name.
Colin Murray Boyles.
I'm just going to say CMB, like yeah. The Cash Money Brothers. Like,
yeah.
I'm too lazy to say all those syllables. Those guys are going to be part of the team, unless something happens. Grady Dick, yeah, I don't love Grady Dick, and if you could flip him, I'd be okay with it, but he has a valuable skill in shooting. And the Raptors, they seem to always need more shooting going back 20 years. Jacoby Walter I put fourth, because I think he's not that great. I put Mamu last because he signed for 2 years at $5 million. At the end of those 2 years, either he's going to have dropped off or he's going to be too expensive.
Right, yeah.
I feel like when you start making decisions, just the way the Raptors choose their guys, they seem to like these somewhere between 6'6 and 6'8 positionless players. And so they want Dick to work. They want Jacoby Walter to work. I kind of feel like Mamu, it's not exactly a rental, but I don't think he's a building block.
That Mamu will be seen more as an organizational victory in terms of development, but not a long-term
like if
answer.
Bruce Brown had worked.
Right, yeah.
But he's not part of the team. Like, if in 5 years they win a championship, I'd be shocked if he was part of it. Whereas I'd be shocked if CMB and Shedd weren't.
Right, yeah, that makes sense.
And with Walter and Dick, I don't know. Like, Dick's in his third year.
But he took it, like, he took a jump last year when he was healthy, and he did play well. And again, it's we talked
he's
about
a lottery
year.
Pick, and he needs to be better.
Yes, absolutely, he does.
I if he was a Leaf, we would be all over it. We would be obsessed with the fact that from game to game, he's not showing consistency. You know, he's got a little bit of cover because he's a Raptor, and because frankly, his skills, like, what is he, like the ninth guy on the team who's basically his size? They have so much redundancy there. Someone's got to step up.
Yeah, we're all hoping it because they don't have that true sharpshooter. And Grady Dick at moments and draft profile looks like he should be that guy.
He should be that guy. That's why they got him. Mm-hmm. He's not a good defender.
Nope.
And if he's not hitting threes at a high clip, and he hasn't been,
then he doesn't.
What do you
have
need him for?
You don't. You absolutely don't need him.
I do love Darko though. I love that he went to the two guys at the end of the bench from the 905. He's like, you don't want to play? Fuck it. Take your Christmas party now, then, boys.
I'll only say this, and it's nothing against Darko. I was getting just PTSD of last year's team when the tank when I saw Lawson. I'm like, Lawson, what are you doing here? It's nothing against him. He was a great story, but last year was just such an unsatisfying season. So when I saw him out there, I'm like, oh God, don't do that. Don't do a tank. Have you seen Washington and Brooklyn? You have no chance to tank.
I want to do a Matt Cause top five wines gifts.
Yep, I got
and
it.
And I also want to talk about the Leafs. Which one would you prefer to do first?
We'll do the wine thing because we did the sports. We'll sort of just bounce back
all right.
And forth.
So, balance. Yeah.
So we're doing...
So this is the whole bit over the course of the month is you give people gift suggestions because people love to give wine. And I suggested dessert wines because this is something that people, like it might feel a little special because people don't buy them that often. And also you eat so many sweets at this time of year. It might be nice to have something and open it that you can have a piece of cake with.
Yeah. And by the way, red wine does not go well with dessert. Everyone always says, oh, Cabernet and chocolate. No, it's a shit combination. I'm not a fan. So, okay, I got five, and I will do them in the order from least expensive to most.
Perfect.
That?
Okay, yeah. And give the prices, too, so yep. People can mentally,
right here.
Mentally check out, is this something I want to spend?
Yeah, and all of them you will find at the LCBO. I did the list, so it's not like, oh, there's one bottle, but you've got to travel here to get it.
Can you Uber wine to your place?
I imagine you could. I've never done that before. I've only done Uber Eats once in my entire life.
Really?
Yeah, I will not do it. It adds so much more money to it. Also, what's the point? We live downtown. So if I'm going to live downtown and pay more money for less square footage, the least I can do is walk over to get my burrito.
Yeah, the point is you don't have to get out of your pajamas.
You know, jeans are not that tough. Number five is Taylor Fladgate Late Bottled Vintage Port. It's $18.95. And when you try it, it is remarkable. It is remarable that it is it's not that expensive. Number four, now this is a half bottle. Actually, so then number four, Henry Appelham, their Cabernet / Vidal Ice Wine, $39.95. Number three, Cave Springs Late Harvest Riesling, $29.95. And the two big ones, there is a Justino's Madeira, a 10-year-old, that's $62.95. And then number one, I love this one. Taylor Fladgate again. I'm just a big fan of that house. Their 20-year-old Tawny Port. It's $72.95. It is beautiful. And you just need a little glass. It'll survive forever after you open it. So it's not like you're, you know, uh-oh, we've opened the bottle. It's an alcoholic mission impossible. We have a select amount of time to drink it.
That's one of my biggest complaints about wine. Mm-hmm. I don't really drink anymore, but when I did, I hate it because my wife doesn't drink it. Mm-hmm. And it's just, we're the only two grown-ups in the house. So if I open a bottle of wine, I have to drink a whole bottle of wine. And I've got about 2 days to do it. And I don't want to drink a whole bottle of wine by myself in 2 days. So that is a good suggestion. I love that about the port. With dessert wines, do you have to have them with dessert or can you drink them on their own?
No, you drink most of these. You can drink on their own. A lot of them go really well with cheese or nuts or things like that. Like you take a lot of these with blue cheese is a great combination.
Now, Can you have any of these through a funnel or a foam hat?
Okay, of these five, the one that I would probably say you could funnel, the late harvest Riesling, the Cave Spring Select late harvest Riesling. If you're going to funnel it, I would.
If I'm going full Duffman,
yeah,
that's the one.
That is the one that I would do. So all five of those, really well made. Also, ice wine, when they're made well, they don't taste goopy, syrupy, sweet. When they're made well, you can tell there's sweetness there, but the acidity holds it all together.
It's a silly question, but do you keep them in the freezer?
No.
Or the fridge?
Just keep them in the fridge. Fridge or in ports, you don't even need it. The ports I got in a cupboard above the stove.
I like port.
Yeah.
It tastes kind of like fruity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And depending on the tawny you get, they start to get a little less fruity, a little bit more dates, figs, things like that. So it's really cool.
Well, dates and figs are fruits.
Away from berries, away from fresh fruits to a different type. But yes, you are.
Figs are really underrated. Do you ever just sit around and eat figs? Dates are good too, but nobody eats figs.
I remember in this next sentence, don't worry, Bob, I'm going to punch myself in the face. I remember when Amy and I were in Provence in this appellation called Bandol, getting a tour of the vineyards with the winemaker. That's the sentence. And he picked some figs from the tree. And it had been so long since I had a fig. Part of me was like, ooh, I don't know if I want to eat this. But if I refuse in this beautiful moment, like just put me in the car and send me home. And it was delicious. It was so good. So yes, I agree with you. Very pro fig.
Christmas, when you read about it in the Victorian times, sounds like such a drag where like figs were a gift.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. What did you get? Oh, father, you got me some plums. I'm like, really?
An Xbox.
Yeah. If you've seen this, it's called virtual reality. My reality is I will die at 20.
Ooh.
Pap, I got the black lung.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me some plums.
Not a good time. Not a good time. People who say that the world sucks, just read a little Victorian literature.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it doesn't suck, but for a little perspective, you know, our sewers work most of the time.
The best time to ever be alive is today. The next best time is tomorrow. Even with whatever's going on with, orange turd, it's still the best time to be alive.
Matt, that's fucking beautiful.
Thank you. Thank
Except
you.
The orange turd part.
Yeah. Well, you know.
But the whole, what was it? The best time to be alive is today. The next best time is tomorrow.
That's right.
That's beautiful. I really like that.
Thank you. I don't know where I read that.
Well, I kind of feel like on the heels of that, maybe we should do some Bob wisdom in the form of dot, dot, dot. And then we back and do the Leafs. The idea is little observations that end with an ellipsis. And then you choose which ones you want to talk about. Okay. You ready?
Yep.
This one starts with the World Cup. If Italy plays Canada in the World Cup, as they might, my family will be so torn. It'll be like Jack Tripper with two dates at the Regal Beagle. Dot, dot, dot. And this is a college football playoffs one. The selection process is over. The 12 teams are in. And since the college football playoffs are basically about power, reputation, and relationships, it's more or less tariff policy, but for sports. Dot, dot, dot. James Harden just passed Carmelo Anthony to be the 10th all-time player on the NBA scoring list.
What a bunch of losers.
Is he the most amazing athlete that's stuck in reputational purgatory? Dot, dot, dot. And then finally, apparently there's a new Avatar movie coming out. And who likes these things? Dot, dot, dot.
We'll start with the Avatar, not because it's the last one.
Is this one called Fire and Ice?
Sure.
Or something?
Ash, Fire and Ice. Fire and water. No, I think water.
Water and fire?
Fire and water. Why don't they just call it steam? Eh? You know, you put those two together. Hey, how you guys doing today? I brought it up to Amy. I think it was Amy. And I'm like, I pointed to the TV and said, there's a new Avatar movie coming out. Did you know? No idea. For something that first one was such a phenomenon, this movie, it seems like no one gives a shit.
Is this movie 3 or 4? I don't even know.
I think it's 2.
No, there was an Avatar 2 before.
Oh, there was.
See,
fuck.
Most of us didn't know about it. But here's the thing. It is a multi-billion dollar franchise, which begs the question, who is watching this thing? Do you know anybody who's an Avatar fan?
No. No. I was at a Christmas party last night, and there was mentions of the Balrog. So I was with the nerds.
Uh-huh.
And I was contributing.
Lord of the Rings, if you don't know.
Yeah, if you don't know, whatever. Everyone knows. I was contributing heartily to this 20-sided die conversation.
Mm-hmm.
No one brought up Avatar. Like, not one person.
Shall we do the Balrog's greatest moment with Gandalf?
You shall not pass!
And yet both of us have felt the touch of a woman.
Yeah, It's been a while.
Quite remarkable. So why is that? Why didn't no one care?
So here's the thing. Why does no one care?
Yeah. Because
the stories stink. The stories are awful. The tech is incredible. And certainly that first one was mind-blowing, what you could do with CGI, tell a whole story that way, and so realistic and amazing. But I didn't see the second one. The actual script in the first one, it's fucking terrible. Like, you'd get a C in screenwriting class for that.
But it's in a lot of ways, it's like Titanic. Rich people, bad. Poor people, hero.
Yeah, and this one was... But despite the fact it has a good message, Matt. Yeah.
Well, but it's such a basic one. It's like, corporation, bad. Must save environment. Of course we should. And greedy corporations suck balls. We all agree. But for in terms of script, there's nothing compelling about it.
It's like Enya. Mm-hmm. And here's what I mean. Enya sold 50 million records. You know, she did Sail Away. Do you know anybody ever who owned an Enya record?
No.
How does she sell 50 million records and you don't know anybody who bought one? Not one person. Back in the day when they used to have CD trees and you would go and you'd spin it around and you'd look at what someone's CDs were, nobody ever had Enya.
I wonder, which are these countries? Like, going back to Avatar, I just assumed China.
Yeah.
Like, how did that movie make money?
I'm like, did everyone in China see it three times?
I mean, if they see it once and a half, you're going to make your money back. But you know the real shame of it all is, like, James Cameron is a very talented filmmaker, and he has spent his entire life now dealing with blue people. Like, it just feels like he could have done other stuff. Like, Terminator.
Terminator's so good, though.
It's so good.
Like, Aliens is so good.
Exactly. Like, he is a very capable, obviously, he's an incredible filmmaker, but he's just been in these Avatar movies.
I want to talk about James Harden with you.
Yeah, let's do it. I did the sneaky thing. The Harden passes Carmelo. Like, whoa, here's the baton, loser. Thanks, loser.
Well, it's funny because you hate both those players.
I'm not a fan.
And number eight on the list, I believe, is Kevin Durant. And you hate him, too.
Jesus.
So this is the Matt Cause reputational purgatory. Or hell, I guess you could say. But we'll call it purgatory. And I thought about James Harden, how people don't like him.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of good reasons for that. But and his playoff success hasn't been there. He's tanked in a lot of big playoff games. But when you look at his career, he's got to be one of the 20 greatest players who ever lived. He's absolutely incredible.
You say the top 20, but if I threw, I could probably, we're not going to do it here because then it'd just be like, oh, let me go check Basketball Reference. I think I could very easily find 20 players that are better than James Harden.
25,000 plus points, mm-hmm. more than 7,000 assists, more than 6,000 rebounds. Do you know how many other players in the history of the game have ever accomplished that balance? Oscar Robertson, mm-hmm. and LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
Add James Harden to the list.
Bill, I don't know if it was Bill Simmons or someone in his orbit said it, that James Harden is basically the Karl Malone of guards. Incredibly durable, puts up lots and lots of numbers, never won a title.
So if you look at the players, the most points in NBA history who have never won a title, here's the list. Malone is first.
Mm-hmm.
Harden is now second over Carmelo. Then Dominique Wilkins, Russell Westbrook, Vince Carter, and DeMar DeRozan.
Hmm. Well, I mean, with Vince, he stuck around till the very end. Mm-hmm. You know, just averaging like 9 minutes.
I was shocked DeMar. You know, DeMar, God bless him, drafted 9 out of USC, comes to the team. You think, oh, he's just another jumper. And now he's got a Hall of Fame career.
He's a bucket. Like, as the kids say, he's always going
to get... He's a what?
He's a bucket.
Oh, he's a bucket.
He's always going to get you one.
I'm going to make a quick case here for Harden.
Mm-hmm.
In 2012, he wins the Sixth Man Award with Oklahoma City. And in 2018, he wins the MVP Award. That's in a pretty incredible swing. You don't usually get guys who are sixth men who get so much better that they can win the MVP. That growth is a pretty cool and maybe underdeveloped narrative in NBA history. Not only is he incredibly high in all-time threes made, but he's also incredibly high in all-time free throws made. So his game has tremendous variety. He's not a Steph Curry where he's just out in the back bombing. He's not, Karl Malone where he's in the post. He's creating some kind of weird hybrid game, which is really where the modern game is all about. Speaking of which, his step back jumper has been emulated so many times that he basically authored a new way of playing offense with that step back shot. He's an elite playmaker, high efficiency, and volume scoring. How many players are playmakers, highly efficient while shooting at volume.
He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. There's no doubt about it. I've just never enjoyed his game. The step back jumper, which he dribbles for 18 seconds and takes it. Like, the fact that he makes it is impressive. But you know what? He's Avatar. Everything about, he's Avatar. It's incredibly impressive, but it inspires no one. No one enjoys it, but you all acknowledge how remarkable his regular season achievements are. It's boring to watch. So, like, listen, good for him for doing all that scoring. Like, and I mean that. I honestly mean that. But he was also put in systems where it's like, listen, our system is about getting you stats.
When he went to Houston, he explained, I am the system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that proved to be true. He averaged almost 30 points over 8 seasons in Houston. If Chris Paul doesn't get hurt in the playoffs and James Harden actually wins a title, is this conversation totally different?
Yes.
That seems a little arbitrary to me.
I know, but that's sports. That's
is it, or is it just how we choose to look at it? See, it's funny because I was thinking with him, the narrative, like, we don't like the way he acts. He doesn't try hard enough. He used to come in out of shape, whatever.
During COVID, he was out partying at nightclubs in Las Vegas.
So here's my point. Joe Namath, Broadway Joe, was famous for his partying, and they all loved him for it.
That's right.
Joe, great quarterback, loves his horse, that guy. And for some reason, that was accepted. Dikembe Mutombo, do you remember the story back in the Gold Club? It was this NBA sex scandal.
Who wants to sex Mutombo?
But we love Mutombo, so we think that that's fun. Oh, you know, he's...
He's got
tons of prostitutes, but you know what? He sounds like Cookie Monster.
And no athlete has done more... I can't think of another athlete that did more charitable work after his career was done than Dikembe Mutombo.
I'm not disparaging Mutombo. Yeah. What I'm saying is we pick and choose what we see as faults based on who we like. Harden did exactly the same thing as those guys.
Well,
have a lot of fun.
Yes, but Harden also forced his way out of a lot of places, was a complete asshole. And, you know, we don't know, because there's no phones or anything back then during the Joe Namath days, but, you know, what he did during COVID, partying and not being with the team. Like, what I always hated about when Harden quit, you're not just hurting the team, but there's going to be a lot of staff and coaches and assistant coaches that are going to get fired because the team does bad. And now those human beings and their families are going to try to find a way to pick things up again. So I was never a huge Harden fan. Do I view his career partially because of personal reasons? Yes. Like, if we're going to be honest, yes. But his numbers dropped always precipitously in the playoffs, especially as series went on. He was kind of the Matthews and Marner of the NBA.
It's funny because I was literally about to say that if Matthews continues to score at a high clip, let's say, I don't think he's ever going back to 69 goals again, but it was silly to think that he would. Those kinds of seasons are outliers. But if he continues to be a 50-goal scorer for the next 5 or 6 years, he's going to put up a Hall of Fame career. Mm-hmm. He's already on the cusp of becoming the highest scoring Leaf of all time. He's not even out of his 30s yet. We're going to see him in terms of how he performs in the playoffs. And it's really weird. And this is what I mean by reputational purgatory, is it's like we lose the ability to be objective about someone's talent if they don't fulfill the criterion we place on them.
John Elway was looked at one way and then and couldn't get it done in the big game. And it was unfair because every time they went to a Super Bowl with Denver, the opponent was far, far better.
So is Elway that much better than Marino because Marino didn't have Terrell Davis?
Elway in the second Super Bowl was the MVP. Terrell Davis didn't do much against Atlanta.
Marino hadn't had a better team.
Yes. Elway had a better team when he won those two Super Bowls than any team that Dan Marino had.
If Dan Fouts would have had a better defense, mm-hmm. how would we look at Dan Fouts today?
Oh, differently. I think everyone accepts the fact that Marino was hard luck. I don't think anyone looks at no one looks at Marino as a choker because of just how gifted he was. And when they did get the Super Bowl, that 84 49ers team with Joe Montana, I think they're like 15-1. No one was beating that team.
Let's just sum it up by saying you acknowledge that Harden's great, mm-hmm. but you refuse to give him credit for being generational or
I don't
in that super top elite category.
He's not top 25, and I don't. He is not as good a player as his statistics are.
He's not as good as like a Jokic, but then Jokic is making a case now for being top 5. But he's better than a Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis, what he did in Game 6 to beat Phoenix.
That's one game. I'm talking about the span of a career.
I know, but listen. What you are getting to at the heart of it is the unfair nature we view athletes when it comes to winning championships. And sometimes we ignore all the factors and everything in the ecosystem that goes to winning a championship. But at some point, when we want to talk about the top, what you did in the championship matters. It's why Aaron Rodgers, you could argue, is maybe the most gifted quarterback ever. But he's only been to one Super Bowl. And when you're playing in that level of where you want to put you near the top, the unfairness of championships becomes part of the math.
Well, speaking of championships and unfairness, it's a good way to segue to the Leafs. They lose 2-1 to Montreal in overtime over the weekend. They now sit sixth in the Atlantic. They're tied with Florida. They are third last in the conference. They have 30 points, but everybody else does too. The Rangers right now hold the second wild card spot, and they're sitting at 34 points. The Leafs have five teams ahead of them before they get to that final playoff spot: Philly, Detroit, New Jersey, Columbus, and Florida. Here's my Leafs in six words, and this is not a prediction, because the word think is going to do a lot of work in this sentence. But my six words are, I don't think they make it.
I agree. I don't think the Maple Leafs make it either. Now, Chris Tanev has started to skate. That's big for the team. But right now, they're relying on Dennis Hildeby to keep them afloat. And not only afloat, they got to win. It's not like, hey, just keep us at 500. And at the beginning of the year, the team thought so low of him. Ooh, that's a lisp coming there. That they signed. Remember, it was a Caden Primo. Whatever.
No, you got it, Caden Primo. They talked about bringing in James Reimer.
Yeah. Yes, James Reimer. Actually, they invited him. He showed up for a couple of days. So they thought so little of Hildeby that they brought in these other guys who have now been cut. Now it's like Dennis. He's played well. He's played well this year with the Maple Leafs. But now they got to rely on him.
Well, what's the latest intel on Joseph Wold? With the Leafs, it's impossible to know.
Who fucking knows?
Right.
Slightly off topic. The Monday night football game tonight.
Eagles-Chargers.
Justin Herbert's going to play tonight. You know what Justin Herbert said? Oh, yeah, I had surgery on my non-throwing hand. They had to he went into detail of what happened. And you know what everyone did? Everyone's like, ooh, okay. And then we all moved on. But with the Maple Leafs, it's like some big state secret about your injury. Here's the thing. If they do it in football, we know a lot of that's because of gambling and lines and the relationships with Vegas. I know. But the quarterback, the most important position, told everyone everything. And in the NHL, we have no clue when any goalie's coming back.
The NHL now has to deal with Polymarket. And they've got their gambling connections too. I don't understand how the book can somehow let such vague information around injuries be public. When you consider how much money, like millions and millions of dollars spent every year, and the information is incomplete. I actually just don't get it. I don't know how like FanDuel or whoever doesn't just say to Gary Bettman, we're going to change this policy.
I'm surprised I haven't as well. And the only answer I can think of is it's an indictment on the NHL and how popular it is in the States, where enough money being bet on it. Like, it's not college football, it's not the NFL, it's not NBA. So I think that's what it is. If the amount of money that was bet on hockey was the same as it was in the NBA, 82 game season sports, I think there would be a lot more of, hey guys, hey Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, you have to be a little bit more honest with your information.
That's a really good point. Can I throw out another? This is more game specific. Another Leafs in six words?
Yeah.
And you got to hear this one in the spirit of Lionel Hutz when he's in court talking about Homer when he goes to the all-you-can-eat fish restaurant. Is this really a man advantage with reference to the power?
Holy shit. By the way, that's not the best part. And then what did you do, Mrs. Simpson? Well, we went home. Mrs. Simpson, may I remind you where you're under oath? We went fishing. It's one of my top five favorite lines of all time.
Does this really sound like a man who had all he could eat?
That power play is such shit. It's last.
It needs Benny Hill music.
Oh my God, but it's last. Like, I can understand, well, you know, they're struggling. They're 23rd or whatever. They've scored 10 goals. Scored 10 power play goals. Nylander's played the whole year. John Tavares has been there the whole year. Matthews has been there 70% of the time. Morgan Riley hasn't missed a game. You know, they had Oliver Ekman-Larsson's having a really good year, and they're last on the power play.
Just on Saturday night, so they had three tries. Mm-hmm. One of them was abbreviated because of a penalty taken. So it was 5 minutes and 11 seconds of power play time, during which they had one shot and zero high danger chances. In over 5 minutes, that's almost impossible. Over the last 11 games, as you said, they're dead last in the league, an 8% success rate.
Shout out Jonas Siegel. Thank you for doing that work for us. Everyone out there, get a subscription to The Athletic. It over-delivers with what you are paying.
I actually nicked that from somebody else.
Oh, really?
Did Jonas use it too?
Yeah.
Attaboy. You know what I love about Jonas's work? He comes up a lot on the pod. But I love the fact that he creates almost a legal brief that's fun to read. He just comes up with a point, proves his point. He actually is very good at identifying where there are holes in the argument because we just can't know. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of fair and balanced, but also big picture thinking.
Yeah, no, he him and Myrtle do such a good job, and Josh Cloak covering the Maple Leafs. So, and again, everyone, you have to pay money for journalism. They have rent as well.
All right, how much time do we have left? Because we've got a lot of NFL to go through, buddy.
We have got 10 minutes.
Okay, well, that's perfect. So yeah. I'm just going to let you cook here, Matt, because last time we talked, we did If Matt Was a Betting Man. And so let's look back over some of the picks and see how they turned out. And you picked Houston over the Kansas City Chiefs.
Bam.
Houston 20, Chiefs 10. Matt, you called it. What happened, though? Because 10 points in a game you have to win, that's not just losing. That's given up.
The boring answer is they were on their backup left and right tackle, and then one of those backups got hurt during the game.
Yeah, but three picks for Mahomes.
I know. Mahomes is horrible. Mahomes was forcing things. A bad game for Travis Kelce. I think one of the picks went off of him. I think Kelce did the football thing where he just got old fast. Mm-hmm. You know, in football, it's not a dimmer switch. It's a light switch. It's you're playing great and then suddenly boom. And that's unfair because he actually had a good start to the year. But the last couple of weeks, he's just making these dumb mistakes and just his body, I think, is starting to fail on him. And now Kansas City, they're not making the playoffs. That's it. They're done. Every year, Mahomes is in the AFC Championship game. And this year, he's not even going to be the playoffs at all.
It's going to be weird. It's going to be weird because it's not even like there was some enormous injury that you can hang your hat on. It's not like Brady goes out and Matt Castle comes in and you understand how they didn't win this year. How pervasive is that light switch, though? This is really the question because this happens with all organizations that win. You start losing players who are good and you start losing players to injury and then you lose players to age. So how much of this team, what percentage of this team would you say light switched this year?
I think the offensive line light switched. I think Chris Jones, who's been healthy, hasn't had really any sort of impact.
He reminds me a bit of Von Miller.
Yeah.
Where we keep talking about him as this dominant player because he was so dominant. But by the time Von Miller got to the Bills, it was almost like you kind of wished there was a time machine you could run that play again from 5 years previous.
Yeah, he was cooked.
Yeah. I don't know that Chris Jones is quite there yet, but it, you know, to your point, you just get a little slower and everybody else gets a little bigger and faster.
Yeah. And they've had some injuries in the secondary and at tackle, but also, I mean, it's been a disappointing year. And the weird thing is how, and this is the part that's impossible to explain. How did last year in the regular season, they went like 11-0 in one score games and they were 15-2. This year they're, I don't know how many, maybe they've won one score game. And they're going to miss the playoffs.
So Florida is not doing great. They're basically at 30 points. Florida Panthers here, I should say. I bring this up because we're talking about previously great teams. But they have a ton of injuries, including to some of their best players. And, you know, there's a bit of a hangover in the first 25% of a season when you've played that deep that many times, kind of banged up. Nobody thinks that Florida is not going to be good at the end of the year. Or maybe they're not going to be. Maybe sometimes we get so used to seeing a team a certain way that we won't let us tell them who they really are.
Well, that's, and I'm like that with Florida. I still think they're making the playoffs. Barkov, Kachuk. I mean, Kachuk will be coming back.
Because how could you not?
Yeah, because all they do is win. And it's the same way with Kansas City.
But it's funny because to your point, you said a couple weeks back, I don't think Kansas City is going to make the playoffs. But if they do, I think they'll be in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It is, the championship pedigree is a real thing.
Getting back to the Harden conversation.
Right. It is a real thing, but also I think that it creates a bit of a mystique in our minds. Kansas City has told us all year who they are, and we keep waiting for them to have been tricking us.
They're, Shouldn't there be a reward for if you've won it all, especially a couple times? Don't you deserve that mystique? Don't you deserve, like with Kansas City, you're right. They have told us all year who they are. But what we know is who they've been. And who they've been is the team that always, you know, that goes to the Super Bowl every year.
Yes, they do deserve that mystique. However, when you break down the constituent parts of something, mm-hmm. we often lie to ourselves about it. I'm thinking now about Dave Boland, who wins three cups with the Blackhawks, and they bring him in because he's got championship DNA. And you know what else he has? Mm. Not much of a game.
No,
he was really just didn't. In a great situation.
Oh, Adam Proto. Was it your fault? I mean, it wasn't his fault on the hockey news when they had Boland on and they had him bleeding blue.
I thought that was David Clarkson.
Oh, was
David
that Clarkson? That was bleeds Clarkson. Blue. My apologies. My apologies to other horrible Leaf signings from the past.
The other side of it, and this one Matt got wrong, as we talk about formerly great teams that didn't make it over the hump. Steelers 27, Ravens 22. You actually took the Ravens going into this one because the Steelers have been so bad leading up to this game.
The one stat that everyone is throwing around, by the way, shout out Mike Sando from The Athletic, a great NFL read, is Rodgers went like 4-for-4 on the deep ball, and he hasn't done that all year. That honestly, a stunning result. And Lamar Jackson hasn't completed even 60% of his passes. And I said it last week that you got to be concerned about Lamar because he's banged up. And if he's not a technically great passer, but when he's fully healthy and he can scramble, he's an incredibly dangerous passer. But you take away the athleticism and it seems to trickle down to his ability to complete balls.
I can't stand Aaron Rodgers. And even in victory, he made me mad when he's talking about Mike Tomlin. He's like, we won, so I guess you can all shut up for the week. He's such a prick. He's just such an incredible prick. It's interesting, though, because that game in a lot of ways was a bit of two coaches with incredible legacy who were sort of playing for the right to come back next year.
Correct.
I know you think Harbaugh is coming back next year, but should he, though?
There isn't that hot assistant coach out there.
You say that, but it's still a...
I know, but they last year they were 12-5. They've done a ton of winning. And listen, he's not a sacred cow, okay? Like, there's only a couple sacred cows.
He's not Tom Landry.
No. But, he's not like Sean McVay. He's not like, there are certain coaches that are sacred cows where you would never let them go. He's not there. But he's, to me, his body of work demands that he keeps that job because I don't see that other guy out there that's clearly better.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Does his coaching help this team get back to the playoffs next year?
I think so.
Okay, that's the only question you have to answer.
Yeah.
Mike Tomlin, you're never sure if it's a roster thing or if it's the way he coaches.
And he's going to do it again.
He's going to do it
They're
again.
They're going to fucking do it again.
It's unbelievable.
When they won and then the Bills beat Cincinnati, really exciting game. At that point, you're like, oh my God, Mike Tomlin and the Steelers with Aaron Rodgers, who has not been good, they're going to win the division.
He might be a genius. Because he doesn't have much, and he keeps finding a way to get into the playoffs. And the discussion is they always underperform once they get there. But the fact that they get there year after year is kind of incredible.
Yeah, it's funny though. You talk to a lot of Steelers.
Plus, he's got football coach DNA.
Yeah.
He just looks like a coach. He talks like a coach. Everything about him, they're going to have to pry the clipboard from his cold, dead hands.
The problem with the Steelers is they haven't been able to find that quarterback since Roethlisberger. Kenny Pickett's been shit. They've, just danced around it and just done half measures over and over again.
It's funny because this isn't a Matt betting thing because we didn't talk about this game, but the Titans beat the Browns 31-29, which is important only because it means now that Las Vegas has the best odds for the number one pick.
Oh, and that's not true. It's the Giants.
Oh, is it the Giants?
It is. It's right now. It's the Giants because of strength of schedule. But if you I looked at this one. The projections are though. By the end of the year, the odds are very much tilted that it will be the Raiders picking.
Okay, first. So I misread the story, but this is interesting because the question I wanted to ask is it the worst karmic bite in the ass for an NFL team to be the worst team in the league and not have a great quarterback waiting to come up?
It's the worst. And that's exactly what this year is. And some team is going to draft way too high.
Have you started looking at Fernando Mendoza from Indiana yet?
He's great. He's
pro ready.
Pro ready. But who is it they described him as? It was not flattering. It was some like medium. Oh, it was, he's a Kirk Cousins type.
Not even a Matt Ryan type, a Kirk Cousins type.
Kirk, and it's just, and listen, Kirk Cousins, I'm going to sneeze in a second.
Bless you. Bless
see
you.
See if we can keep that in or edit it out.
No, leave it in. Oh, leave it in. It's charming. It's local color.
Yeah. Yeah. Kirk Cousins, always a productive quarterback, but had a very low ceiling. And if that's the number one quarterback out there, a guy who could be Kirk Cousins, it's so underwhelming. It's a horrible draft this
year. Best case scenario, he's passable.
Yeah. Best case scenario, you can win with him.
Well, and then the best player who's not a quarterback, at least in terms of the rankings, is an edge rusher out of Miami named Reuben Bain Jr.
Yeah, he's really good.
Now, you guys actually have some great pass rushers. So would this, you just draft him and then trade one of your guys?
Yeah, because here's the thing. The Giants are horrible against the run. They're still not getting a lot of sacks. Abdul Carter's an absolute dummy. On paper, the Giants have a wonderful defensive line, but in reality, they haven't been good.
That's a great insult, an absolute dummy.
He is. He's young. He can grow out of it, but at this moment, he is a dummy.
Fernando Mendoza. I thought this game was very interesting yesterday in the snow in Buffalo. Bills 39, Bengals 34. For about three quarters, it looked like the end of the Bills dynasty. Not that it's a dynasty, but we'll say dynasty of being competitive meaningfully in the AFC. And then Josh Allen. Before we get to Josh Allen, I just want to say Joe Burrow, poor guy.
Yeah. By the way, I'm so happy he's playing. I don't want to hear, what's he still doing out there?
He's
if he's
so
healthy,
good.
He should play.
We'll get into that topic when it comes to the Commanders in just a second. But the Bills, like Josh Allen, I don't know if I've ever seen in sports one guy, maybe Allen Iverson with his 2003 Philadelphia 76ers.
I think it was 2000.
2000?
Yeah, whatever. But yes, I know what you're talking about.
Oh, no, 2003 was the Pistons. Yeah, but getting to the final, and it was basically on Iverson's back. Certainly the Cleveland Cavaliers with LeBron James. But you can do that in basketball because there's only five guys on the court at one time. To do that with an entire football team on both sides of the ball, to be good enough for a mediocre team. It's like one superstar and 52 also rans. Apologies to James Cook,
who also has lots and lots of fumbles. James Cook's been great, but he also leads in fumbles as well.
Oh man, he's just brutal. Whenever he gets close to the end zone, you're thinking,
boop.
Yeah, exactly.
Their ball goes by. No, you're right. Josh Allen, it's incredible because, as you said, he's not doing it with stars around him, and
he's not even doing it with good players around him.
Yeah.
They have no wide receivers, Matt.
Nope.
None. The closest thing they had yesterday was Dalton Knox, the tight end.
Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox.
Sorry, I did. No, you're right.
We've all done that.
That's the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of the NFL. It's totally interchangeable.
Yeah, it's often been said.
Well, you know,
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. What's poncier, that or my fig story while walking in Provence?
We're both horrible in totally different ways.
But yes, Josh Allen, he should get the MVP. That's like, listen, Matthew Stafford is having a better year, but Josh Allen is far more important to the Bills than Stafford is to the Rams or any other one out there.
When he, at the end of the game, is getting interviewed, and he says, as he always does, these guys tried so hard, they worked so hard. I always think like he deserves some kind of, like maybe the Walter Payton Award for that.
Because that's their best, they tried real hard. Well, if they were really talented and they tried that hard, they would be so much better.
When I was in a band, you always used to call up your friends because somebody had to come and see the show. And so you all supported each other, you all went to each other's shows. And every once in a while, one of those bands really stunk. And every time you went to go see them, you didn't know, how boldly can I lie about how they did? Because everybody always says, how'd you like it, right? And you know what was always the tell that you thought it was terrible?
Mm.
You guys looked like you had fun up there.
Oh, no. Oh, that's cruel.
If anyone ever said you looked like you were having fun, what they really mean is you didn't get any of that right.
It's like a shitty movie, but commenting on how good the score was.
The Bills wide receivers?
Yeah.
They look like they're having fun out there.
Oh, they're having a great time. Just running and enjoying each other and, competing and downfield blocking. Not getting open. Dropping pass. Oh, it's horrible.
Hey, I want to bounce this over to the Commanders because it's interesting. I want to go to a comment made by Luke Wilson after the games.
All right, this will be our final thing. We got two and a half minutes.
Okay, we'll probably have to wrap it quickly. But Jaden Daniels goes down in the third quarter. Bad elbow. He's ushered off. He's had a lot of injury problems. And if you're Washington, you're a bit snake bit with quarterbacks going down who look generational and then they don't make it with RG3 back in the day. Luke Wilson said he should have been in that game. And it was 14-0 when he got hurt. So it was still a game in the third quarter. Do you agree that when once a team is out, you should just be protecting your best players for next year?
No, absolutely not. Now, in this case, because he's been hurt so much this year, I can understand protecting him because of this specific scenario with him. But in general, no. If you're healthy, you play. That's the point of it. Because then at some point, teams like, well, oh, if you translate that to the NBA, why bother for almost 95% of teams playing? Y'all going to lose to Oklahoma City. Maybe you win one game in the playoffs against them. I don't like going down that road. So, no, I love seeing Burrow out there. If you're healthy, you play. That's what you get paid for. Sports is an entertainment product. You're there to entertain.
All right, Maddie. So that's the show in a nutshell. I don't really have anything to add. How's Friday sound for you? Friday morning sound good?
Friday is good. I'm doing the morning show, so I'll be done at 9:55. So we can do it then.
All right. I brought my my tracksuit. I thought of you as I left the house today because I'm wearing mismatched track pants and hoodie, and I thought Matt would never leave the house looking like this.
Someone's getting pussy tonight.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.